Chapter 31, John Harvey Kellogg and the Living Temple. Dr. Kellogg introduces pantheistic teachings. Ellen White had had a long and close relationship with John Kellogg ever since he completed his medical training in 1876 and began teaching in the early days of the Health Institute. He had been a pillar of strength and influence as the medical work expanded. She had written him thousands of pages of letters and counsel and guidance. She had watched with a mother's love and interest his success in developing the medical work. Frequently she defended him against opposition and criticism of those less talented than he. She said, "Many souls have been converted, many wonderful cures have been wrought. The Lord stood by the side of Dr. Kellogg as he performed difficult operations. When the doctor was overwrought by taxing labor, God understood the situation, and he put his hand on Dr. Kellogg's hand as he operated, and through his power the operations were successful. I wish this to be understood. God has given Dr. Kellogg the success that he has had. I have tried constantly to keep this before him, telling him that it was God who was working with him, and that the truth of God was to be magnified by his physician. God does not endorse the efforts put forth by different ones to make the work of Dr. Kellogg as hard as possible, in order to build themselves up. God gave the light on health reform, and those who rejected it rejected God. One and another who knew better said that it all came from Dr. Kellogg, and they made war upon him. There is no question that Dr. Kellogg was an unselfish, dedicated, much-loved man. He was a generous, great man. But it was largely, yet not altogether, through Dr. John Harvey Kellogg that the great adversary introduced into the ranks of Seventh-day Adventists the seeds of error in the form of so-called new light, just at a time when the medical work was at its height. Pantheism is the term used to designate the strange new teachings that were being introduced. Pantheism pictures God not as a great personal being but as a mysterious essence, an impersonal influence pervading all nature. God is seen in all nature, in trees, flowers, sunshine, air, and human beings. The power of God in nature is confused with the personality of God. Dr. Kellogg had toyed with these concepts before James White's death in 1881, and, considering it great light, had discussed it with Ellen White. "Those theories are wrong," she told him. "I have met them before." He seemed dazed as she showed him the outcome of espousing such a philosophy. She then admonished, "Never teach such theories in our institutions, do not present them to the people." Kellogg first introduced pantheism publicly in 1897 in a series of talks at the Ministerial Institute that preceded the General Conference session held in the College View Church at Lincoln, Nebraska. He drew heavily upon Ellen White in laying out his position that God works through nature and in nature. His next presentation carried the title God and Man. Under this title he gave several talks in which he set forth clearly the pantheistic philosophy he held. Gravitation acts instantaneously throughout all space. By this mysterious force of gravitation the whole universe is held together in a bond of unity. We have here the evidence of a universal presence, an intelligent presence, an all-wise presence, an all-powerful presence, a presence by the aid of which every atom of the universe is kept in touch with every other atom. This force that holds all things together, that is everywhere present, that thrills throughout the whole universe, that acts instantaneously through boundless space, can be nothing else than God Himself. What a wonderful thought that this same God is in us and in everything. In words that seem to put humanity above God, he boldly declared, "What a wonderful thought, that this mighty God that keeps the whole universe in order, is in us. What an amazing thing that this almighty, all-powerful, and all-wise God should make himself a servant of man by giving man a free will, power to direct the energy within his body." Pantheistic views became popular and were taught in Battle Creek College. They were taught in the sanitarium, and were defended by some physicians and some ministers. Ministers and physicians who had a high regard for Dr. Kellogg began to imbibe his philosophy and to develop it in their own work, not sensing the point to which it would lead. One such was E.J. Wagoner, who was also a physician. He was at one time editor of the Signs of the Times and the man who, with A.T. Jones, was used mightily of God at the General Conference session in 1888 to focus attention on the message of righteousness by faith. Elder Wagoner, one of the denomination's highly respected speakers, was repeatedly called upon at the time of General Conference sessions to conduct series of Bible studies. At the General Conference session of 1899, held at South Lancaster, Massachusetts, Wagoner was a delegate from England, where he was engaged in editorial work. In a discussion of health and temperance, he was asked to make a presentation of some things he had been giving to the Battle Creek Sanitarium family. He opened with a rather bold statement. "I thank God, brethren, that the Lord has taught me something in the last few months, and enabled me to teach something of how to live forever." W.A. Spicer, who was serving with Elder Daniels in the General Conference as the newly appointed Secretary of the Foreign Mission Board, had spent years of service in India. He was astonished at this teaching that was being proclaimed around Battle Creek. He recognized it as pantheism, which is the basis of Hinduism. He asked himself, could it be that the philosophies of heathenism are being taught by leading men in the Seventh-day Adventist Church? During the General Conference session held in Oakland in 1903, Ellen White spent most of the time in an agony of soul as she watched the crisis developing over the threat of pantheism, and Dr. Kellogg determinedly pushing ahead to override all contrary views. She knew that Elder Daniels was suffering with the weight of the responsibility. She wrote frequent letters to Dr. Kellogg urging him to rethink his position. "You are not definitely clear on the personality of God, which is everything to us as a people." Again on April 5, while at the session, she wrote to the doctor. "The specious, scheming representations of God in nature carry their charming, soothing influence as a peace and safety pill to give to the people, in the spiritualistic views that Satan has instituted in your theories." She wrote to him a second letter on the same day. In this letter she said, "Your ideas are so mystical that they are destructive to the real substance, and the minds of some are becoming confused in regard to the foundation of our faith. If you allow your mind to become thus diverted, you will give a wrong mold to the work that has made us what we are, Seventh-day Adventists." After the session closed, Ellen White wrote to Elder Daniels, "If you can move so wisely as to save Dr. Kellogg, and not sacrifice one principle of truth, if you can pass through this crisis without the loss of one soul, it will be because the Lord has worked with minds." She knew that A.T. Jones, a General Conference Committee member, and Dr. Kellogg had worked very closely together, sympathized with each other on the principles of organization, and seemingly had a good rapport. Jones would be in a position to approach Dr. Kellogg. To Elder Jones she wrote, "Dear Brother, I am sending to you three manuscripts to be read to the brethren assembled at Battle Creek in council. These I desire that you shall read to the brethren when you discern that the time has come. You know my anxiety regarding the work, my desire that everything possible shall be done to establish unity and drive out dissension. We must do all in our power to save Dr. Kellogg and his associates from the result of the mistakes they have made, and to help them to see and understand the way of the Lord." Elder Jones received the letter and the documents on Thursday, April 23, and shared them with Elder Daniels, who on Friday wrote to W.C. White. "Our hearts are all made exceedingly glad by the arrival of the documents your mother has sent. They bring relief to the situation. The crisis is here. The settlement must now be made. We shall do everything in our power to win every brother over to the right side, but we cannot compromise nor surrender the banner at this time." AGD to WCW, April 24, 1903.